New Insights on Habit 3, Put First Things First. Many years ago at a family gathering, my dad announced, "I have the greatest trip planned. Are you ready? We are going to Germany." My siblings and I got all excited and asked, "When?" And he replied, "In 3 years." We took our planners out, we didn't have smartphones yet, and realized that none of us had a calendar that booked out that far. Even with Dad's grueling schedule, we did a lot of things together because he was a master at putting first things first and blocking out time in advance. He would say, "Families don't do things together because they don't plan ahead." He'd plan weeks, months, years, even decades ahead. I think it is safe to say that I am really close to all of my siblings today because of this one single practice. This habit didn't come naturally to everyone. My older brother, Stephen, is the author of The Speed of Trust and a world-renowned speaker. He is always so prepared and never gives a speech without doing significant research on the organization he's speaking to. But as a kid, he was the worst procrastinator of all time. The night before any big test or paper was due, he'd stay up all night working until the wee hours of the morning, and then he'd try to fit in an hour or two of sleep. He would literally lie on the kitchen table with all the lights on, knowing that somebody would inevitably run into him while making toast for breakfast. He could not risk sleeping through class, and there was no other way he'd be able to get up. This lifestyle finally caught up to him one day, however, when he had put off doing his math homework for the entire semester. The night before the test, he opened up the textbook for the first time and studied all through the night. The next day, while taking the exam, he said that he totally lost his mind and couldn't remember a single thing. Needless to say, he failed the test. I got such a kick out of this. The urgency addiction. Learning to put first things first is hard. In fact, this is the habit in general that people struggle with most. This explains why my father felt compelled to write the book, First Things First, soon after completing the 7 Habits. Why is Habit 3 so hard? It's urgency, plain and simple. And the reality is, most of us are addicted to urgency. In the PDF file, there's an exercise labeled Urgency Index. When you have a chance, take a few moments to fill out that index. I think you'll find it enlightening. If you're like most, you either have an urgency addiction or you're developing one. It's a self-destructive behavior. It doesn't help that busyness has become a status symbol, according to leading researchers. Throughout history, status has been measured by how much leisure time you have, not anymore. As author Bridget Schult writes, "Unlike a century ago when Americans showed their status in leisure time, busyness has become the new badge of honor. So even as we bemoan workplaces where everyone is busy and no one is productive, busyness has actually become the way to signal dedication to the job and leadership potential. One reason for that is that, while productivity is relatively easy to measure on a factory floor or on the farm, we have yet to develop good metrics for measuring the productivity of knowledge workers. So we largely rely on hours worked and face time in the office as markers for effort. And with the advent of technology and the ability to work remotely, being connected and responsive at all hours is the new face time." Shift your paradigm. The solution to overcoming your urgency addiction is to shift your paradigm from one of urgency to one of importance. Here's what we've learned about the time matrix. Thanks to smartphones, social media, and the like, it is increasingly difficult to stay out of quadrants 1 and 3. In fact, our data shows that 51.2% of our time is spent responding to things that are urgent. Check out the section in the PDF file labeled New Time Matrix. There are also charts there that illustrate where we spend our time and the time plus energy return offered by each quadrant. I've named each of the quadrants after their overriding characteristic. People who live in quadrant 1, I call the procrastinator. The results of spending too much time here include stress and anxiety, feeling burned out, and mediocre performance. The yes man is the term I use for those who live in quadrant 3. They have a hard time saying no to anything that is urgent or popular, resulting in staying incredibly busy while getting nothing of importance done. Quadrant 4 is where a lot of people live. Meet the slacker. Anything done to excess falls in quadrant four. Yes, chilling out and streaming a good movie is part of a healthy lifestyle. It's only when that single movie leads to two or three in a row that it becomes a waste of time, leading to feelings of guilt and apathy. Quadrant two is a quadrant of quality. This is where the prioritizer lives. It's too bad on average that we only spend 30.8% of our time here. Time in quadrant two results in improved relationships, high performance, and balance. This is where we make time to fix the screen instead of continually swatting the flies. Planning a family trip to Germany 3 years in advance is a quadrant two activity, as are exercising, changing your oil, planning your week, going to lunch with a colleague, and doing proactive work, that is, work that is important but not yet urgent. The return on the time and energy you spend in quadrant two is exponential, while the return on quadrant one is only equivalent to the input, and the return on quadrants three and four is virtually non-existent. The key to spending more time in quadrant two is to reduce the amount of time you spend in quadrant three, the quadrant of deception. Quadrant three seems important because it is urgent, and thus it tricks us. When time is scarce, we go through what psychologists call tunneling, meaning we can only concentrate on the most immediate, often low-value tasks. This urgency mode causes us to lose about 13 IQ points. I don't know about you, but I can't afford to lose any IQ. The remedy to quadrant three is to start saying no. Say no to responding immediately to every email or text that comes your way. Say no to serving on that community board when you might be neglecting your family or your health. Say no to filling out the report that no one reads. The key to saying no is to have a deeper yes burning inside of you. Clarify the few things you do well, and then start saying no to everything else. Remember, the enemy of the best is the good. In the words of Emerson, the crime which bankrupts men and nations is turning aside from one's main purpose to serve a job here or there. I remember when I made up my mind to write the 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teens book. At the time, I had a full-time job and kids at home, and so I wasn't sure how I was going to get it done. But I felt such a great sense of stewardship toward making the 7 Habits come alive for teens that I just had to find a way. My solution was simple. I had to say no to everything else except my family and my job and this book. This was easier said than done. It was only a few weeks later that I was asked to take on a significant leadership role in my community that I really wanted to do. And the person who invited me was an older mentor of mine whom I greatly admired and wanted to please. I was so torn. What should I do? But as I thought about my deeper yes, it became clear. So I made one of those miserable phone calls and told this mentor no. I told him I wanted to write the book, but I don't think he understood. Over the next 3 years, I had to say no to sleeping in on Saturday mornings, no to some family vacations, and no to 100 other fun and good things. But my plan ultimately worked, and I was able to finish the book while keeping it together at work and home. Truly, the enemy of the best is the good. Block out time in advance. Of all we've learned about time management at Frank & Covey after working with millions around the globe, if I had to narrow it down to one main idea, it would be this. Set aside 30 minutes each week to plan your week and watch it change your life. I repeatedly heard my father say, "If you are only planning on a daily basis, you are just managing crises." And he'd say, "If you knew that 30 minutes of weekly planning could significantly leverage the other 168 hours of the week, why would you not want to do it?" I'd watch Dad do his weekly planning, usually on Sunday nights. He'd sit down, write down his various roles, then think through what he wanted to accomplish for each role during that week. He was big on listening to one's conscience and asking the question, "What is the most important thing I can do in this role this week?" He also believed that relationships are the stuff life is made of, and that effective people prioritize people over things. and relationships over schedules. My colleague, Sue Dathy Douglas, tells about an extraordinary friend of hers, Captain Denny Flanagan of United Airlines, who does this very thing. Here's what she said. If anyone knows how to put first things first, that is, his passengers, it's Denny Flanagan. In this world where air travel is so often such a trial, no one treats passengers the way he does. I know. At the end of a miserable 20 hours in an overcrowded gate at the Chicago airport, he was the captain who would either get us to Los Angeles before the airport closed for the night or not. The timing was critical and really tight. I was mesmerized when he took the microphone and rallied all the passengers. He told us he knew we had experienced a horrible day full of delays, and he wanted to keep the airline's promise to get us to California, but he would need all our help. The next thing I knew, the passengers were lining up, helping each other with kids, strollers, walkers. The plane was boarded more efficiently than I have ever seen, and cheerfully by every passenger. The flight attendants saw the captain holding babies, helping passengers get on, and loading their luggage, and they followed suit. About 2 hours into the flight, I received a personal note from him, thanking me for my loyalty. I still have it. In years of flying and millions of miles, I have never seen another airline pilot do what he did that night. Later, I discovered this is typical of Denny Flanagan. If there is a diversion or a delay, he orders enough pizza or McDonald's for everybody on the plane. While they eat, he explains in detail why there's a delay and jokes around with them. By the way, this is my first flight, he says. Then as the passengers make nervous noises, he adds, today. Captain Flanagan raffles off prizes for his passengers. He calls parents of unaccompanied children to let them know their kids have arrived safely. With his phone, he takes photos of pets in the cargo area and shows them to their owners so they will know that their pets are safe and comfortable. He personally helps passengers in wheelchairs board the plane. He distributes his own business cards to frequent flyers with a handwritten note thanking them for flying with him. Nobody requires him to do any of these things, but in true proactive form, he says, every day I work from my heart and choose my attitude. And that's the end of Sue's story. You'd think that the captain of an airliner would have more important things to do than take pictures of pets, but to Captain Flanagan, this is the essence of putting first things first. He clearly believes that spending the majority of his time in Quadrant 2, preventing urgencies, planning ahead, and building relationships, results in a great return on friendships, customer loyalty, and personal joy. I wish you success in saying no more often, so that you can say yes to the people and things that matter most to you.